I call this meeting in order, the Planning Commission work session. And do we have anybody on Zoom?
Yes, we have Nyla Jebowitz on Zoom with the meeting.
Okay. And anybody else? Is that the only one? We didn't get Dylan or Greg? Okay.
No.
All right, first up, call order and roll call. Jim Patrick here, Bill Brannigan.
Here.
Bob Berman.
Here.
Jim Hanselman.
Here.
Gary East is absent. Braulio Escobar.
Here.
And Dustin Capri and Greg Sutton are absent. Unfinished business, nothing. Or is untrust petition plan, part two, land use regulations. Derek.
Yep. Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. Yes, this work session is now the second of three to kind of go through what a number of the changes are that came out of the recommendation from the Project Advisory Committee as we position this for a hearing. So I've got it now penciled in as the initial hearing with the Planning Commission on June 13th. So my plan is tonight is to go through where all of the changes, and I've got a draft that is substantially complete that's rolled in the code changes that came out of Tech Memo 12. Now, you've had a chance to go through Tech Memo 12 in a previous work session when it was just, we were working in Tech Memo world at the time. But this is actually, you know, taking their recommendations and rolling them into a revision of the municipal code.
What is this memo?
This is Tech Memo 12. This was the final Tech Memo that was produced by Angelo Planning Group, which is a
I ought to be able to find that in my archives because I have trouble.
Correct. And it's on the newporttsp.org website. Under the background documents, you'll find it there as well. But my game plan is to go through this with you during the work session, and then you'll have between now and the next work session to actually kind of read through what I've covered. If there are changes or corrections you'd like, just send them to me directly, and I'll go ahead and flag them. If they're editorial in nature, I'll just make them. If they're something you want to talk with the rest of the commission, I can flag it as a discussion item for the next work session, which will be your May 23rd work sessions, where I want to bring it all together so you kind of see what the final package is. You've seen the comprehensive plan policies prior work session, so we'll bring it all together for the May 23rd. And if you're comfortable coming out of May 23rd, we'll go ahead and get the notification going for the first public hearing on June 13th. So that's the plan of attack. I wish I'd kind of push this a little bit quicker, but there are a lot of changes to the code that go along with this. And so it's taken a bit of time to put that together. And I still have a few pieces, loose ends, that I need to double back and take care of. I do want to note that Nyla Jebasek had provided some written comment that she wanted to share with the commission members. You guys all have a copy. I trust you've had a chance to take a look at it. It's been posted to the online packet as well. So I'm going to go ahead and start. So what we have is I'm going to toggle between the two documents and kind of point out, you know, kind of where changes are being made and why. Some of this will be a good refresher for everybody. So we had this memo had 15, what they call them reference points, but they're basically recommendations, and they had 15 separate recommendations for changes in different parts of the municipal code. And I'll take them in turn. The first one had to do with going into transportation, into our use categories and calling out transportation facilities explicitly as outright permitted uses. So I'll show you where that got picked up. Ike, where'd it go? Well, bear with me. I think I accidentally. There it is. Okay, it was still there. It was just hiding. So under in zoning, there are a number of, you know, where we break down and describe what the different zoning classifications are. I made changes to pick that up in, the residential and commercial, where I went in and added in transportation facilities as a permitted use, which you'd see right there. So going in and adding it in, I had to make a few other changes so that it, you know, we used to have utility and roads, kind of basic utilities and roads kind of morph together. Now utilities are broken out separate from roads. Transportation facilities. Similarly, on the residential side, I made the same change there at the bottom. Transportation facilities are called out outright. Now, what we had been doing is interpreting transportation facilities as an accessory use. So if you were doing roadway improvements when you were building a new house, for example, that was considered ancillary to the house. This makes it clear that it's outright permitted to do that type of work. So that's about it there. Go back to the,
Derek.
Yeah.
just to step back a second, are these mandated code changes or are these recommended code changes?
These are recommended code changes,
from that group.
From that group.
Okay.
And it was in, you may recall what we did was early in the process, they did an audit where they went through our code and compared it to current state statute administrative rule, in particular what we call the transportation planning rule, which sets out certain mandatory things that we have to do. There will be a few things in here we have to do. You know, we don't have to do this. This was just a code clarification recommendation from them.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
As you walk through the suggested changes, could you point out those that are mandatory?
I'll do what I can today, but I'll make sure I get that for the 23rd, because I need to go back and look at the audit myself, Braulio, to make sure I pick up everything.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, so we'll go to... Okay, next one was changes to the traffic impact analysis requirements that we have. So those are, I think can make it easier to toggle on some of this stuff, but here we go, there it is. Those are in still chapter 14.45. That's where we have the traffic impact analysis. Now, the traffic impact analysis is the threshold that we have for requiring new development to do a detailed impact analysis of the traffic that's likely to be generated, because we anticipate that it's going to be significant enough that there may be improvement requirements. So we've had this on the books since... Oh, thank you. Since 2012, when we did the 2012 TSP update, we added this in. Prior to that, the city never really had a clear threshold for requiring detailed analysis. And we had talked about this previously, but one of the significant changes is where we found that the 100 p.m. peak hour trip threshold was way too high. A 50 p.m. peak hour threshold is a little bit more reasonable. Not everything keys cleanly off a peak hour. So we have a ADT, what we call average daily trip threshold, or a peak hour threshold. So if either of those are exceeded by a proposed development, and those are things we can reasonably look up.
What does PM stand for?
PM.
Is that afternoon?
Afternoon, yeah. It's your PM peak hour. Oh, so okay. What that keys off is that's your rush hour, if you want to think of it.
All right. It's just not usually written as two capitals, so that's a little confusing.
You hit me with grammar.
Well, that's what I do.
um,
Change it to afternoon.
That actually, the reference to PM peak hour is what you'd find in what we call the ITE manual, the engineer's manual for this kind of thing. But I can go with a P.M. It's no biggie. We did add, because one of the changes or areas that the TSP focused on that we haven't really addressed well is access management. And so F is a new requirements that says, look, existing or proposed approaches or access connections that currently don't meet minimum spacing or site distance requirements. So we know we have a safety issue. And somebody's doing development that's going to exacerbate that condition, we want to get into a traffic analysis because there may be some things they can do to resolve that. And that's what F's about. G has to do with phased developments. The current code really doesn't deal with that. So if somebody, Windhaven's a good example, does 66 apartments, and then 2 years later does another 78, and they're all proximate to one another. You know, individually the projects don't trigger it. Collectively they would. This is getting at that issue. How do we make sure we're dealing with this collectively? So the kind of the phase development.
So this could this also apply to the discussion we're going to have at the regular session?
Potentially, yep. Absolutely. No, that's a fair point. H is just a corresponding, that's just the corresponding provision with the triggering mechanism earlier about phase development. That when they do a traffic impact analysis, they need to look at the ultimate build out of all phases of the project.
Was that done for Wilder?
It was because in that case, there was a urban growth boundary amendment and land swap, and as part of the UGB and then the annexation, that whole package under the transportation planning rule had to assess that for the entire development. What happened was that resulted in a trip hard cap originally, which has then been lifted in favor of the transportation analysis zones in South Beach and further allocation of trips at that location as part of that process. But it had a hard cap initially from the Oregon Department of Transportation as part of that process. Okay, this gets at plugged-in standards dealing with those challenging intersections. So now with a traffic impact analysis, they've got to look at how well is an intersection functioning? And we get at the level of services and the volume to capacity ratio. This all is distilled in a technical memorandum from a transportation planner or transportation engineer that they end up hiring to do the work. Then some cleaned up cross-references. And then the fee in lieu, which we don't implement, this just gives us the option to implement it. They recommended that be moved to chapter 14.44, I believe, and that's where it went. And so I have a brief explanation of the changes there. So next up would be reference.
Derek, do you have any idea what it would cost a person to prepare one of these transportation analyses?
That's going to vary somewhat based on, you know, how detailed the analysis needs to be, how big is the project, what's the full scope, how many intersections do they have to look at? To give you a sense on a signal warrant. So if we're analyzing all of the traffic, say for and the growth potential for a particular intersection to see if that intersection needs to be signalized. And 36th would be an example because of all the apartment developments going up there. I believe that one's going to run about 5,000 for that.
How about something like the San Veo intersection there?
That's more targeted, but I can't say what a consultant specifically. I'm just trying to give you a sense. Mm-hmm. I had the number on 36 because we actually budgeted that along with 40th, and then between the two, I ended up budgeting about 10,000. And after talking to a couple of different consultants, I felt that was a reasonable number. All right, reference. We did that one. There are some new, I'm going to go through chapter 1444. It picks up a number of different references that I think are relevant. This is our transportation standards, and all of our subdivision standards now have been rolled into here as well as part of the consolidation of Title 13, which was our subdivision regulations, into Title 14, which is our zoning, which allowed us to eliminate a whole bunch of duplicative procedural provisions, and in some cases, inconsistent procedural provisions, because we did address land divisions in Title 14. Process wise. So all of those standards are now in 1444. That's just cleaning up some cross references. The one piece that I'll be bringing that I haven't put together yet is the neighborhood traffic management. That's not going to be in Title 14. The process for that would be under Title 9. It's not a land use process to determine when traffic calming measures should be deployed on a neighborhood collector or a local street, but I didn't have time to pull that together yet. And when you go through and have a chance to take a look at this, I did put, you know, we added it per reference 14 of that memo. I'll give you that memo as well, so you have both. You can compare the two. So these were the transit improvements. They were the transit language that they had recommended we put in there. Getting at, you know, under what circumstances new improvements would be required. And that picked up reference 5. This 060 updated the tables for different right-of-way widths. These are all based on what's in the transportation system plan for the different types of streets, depending upon which, you know, functional classification a street is. Then this gets at, and this table's right out of the transportation system plan, the different standards as it applies to the sizing of travel lanes and on-street parking bays. Those are all the footnotes that go with it. This talks about how we deal with circumstances where there's not enough right of way. Then these are all existing land division standards about reserve strips, alignment, all of that. How intersections are to be aligned, that's all existing subdivision stuff that was just merged over. Half street requirements, sidewalk requirements. I'm going to need to clean this up a little bit. The default under the land division code is sidewalk is required on both sides. However, the TSP makes it clear that if you're dealing with a yield street, low volume street, you can accommodate pedestrian needs in the travel lane. You don't need a sidewalk. Also, we have a process to allow for, you know, sidewalk to be dropped in certain circumstances, but that's going to require a land use decision, and the standards were put into the basically the variance section of the code. This has been, this existing cul-de-sac limitation, this is a big deal for our fire department. Chief Murphy's on, while not excited about shared streets, he understands, and then he'll, and I expect he'll be providing testimony at your hearing about, you know, yes, he understands the need for yield streets, shared streets. He wants to make sure that, you know, we don't have excessively long cul-de-sacs where you end up having a narrow street plus only a single point of access and further compound the issue. But he was comfortable retaining the existing 400-foot maximum cul-de-sac length, and that's what we have. That's what this is depicted here. Street names, marginal access streets. I'm going to blow by this because we have so much to go through. These are all existing provisions. I do need to take a look at the shared use path language just to make sure it lines up. I believe this actually was new language, so it should align with the tables in the TSP and the table right there, which I added in, which is the pedestrian trails access and shared use path. And this is where that fee in lieu option that we haven't utilized landed. So it just got plugged in from 1445 to 1444. I think that's it for that one. Sorry, wrong button. Well, I'm just going to touch on these. One of the other things is we had a whole bunch of definitions that were consolidated. That's under 1401.020. So basically, we brought over and updated some of these definitions. So they either were brought over from the Land Division Code so that we only have them in one spot, or they were modified per the recommendations from Angela Planning Group. So accessway was one.
Accessway is also how you get away with having more dead-end stuff. You know, we have like subdivisions at dead-end, but if there's an accessway on the backside, then that counts as a...
Remember, accessway tends to be not so much an alley, but an accessway would... You know, is it Crestview? The one over by Sam Case where you have the dead-end cul-de-sacs there... What's the name of that street? Right there by the Presbyterian Church? Chambers, thank you. Chambers has an accessway that leads over to Frank Wade Park. So it's basically a pedestrian cycling access through a subdivision. And that's what it's talking about there.
Yeah, but it also says you can use it for emergency vehicles. So I've seen those ones where they have bollards in it. They pull them out.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about for the one that's going to be next to the... The Whaler, the new on Dolphin Street there. We're setting that up as an accessway, and it has the emergency access provision in it. Okay. Just a little bit of cleanup on alley definition.
You actually have any alleys in this town?
We have a bunch. Yes, we do. We have a bunch in the old plats. The old subdivision plats have tons of little alleys that were platted. You know the stuff, the circa late 1800, early 1900 plats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not too many of them are actually fully developed. Sometimes you have gravel access roads back there. Sometimes they're used for utilities.
Explain some of the ones up there around Lake Street.
Yeah, they're 15 to 20 feet wide. They're not, you know.
Yeah, okay.
I think Wilder has some planned as part of their program. Where's the next? There's lots of definitions. I apologize. This is where partition got pulled in from the Land Division Code. Parcel. Head trail was a new definition from the TSP plat, it's from the subdivision code. Reasonably direct, it has to do with transportation standards coming out of the TSP. It's a term that needed to be defined. Replat came from the subdivision code. Roadway. Shared use path. That's new from the TSP. Then the streets then picks up your, basically your different types, functional classifications. Street segment, subdivision, subdivide land. What a transportation facility is, I need to pick that up, but I didn't get that cleanly added. Walkway. So that's, those are all the terms that either came out of the TSP or were sitting as definitions in the land division code that have been folded in and merged. Parking. Access standards were pulled and put into a new chapter, which I'll touch on. So parking, though, had a number of changes to it. Not the parking standards so much for off-street parking.
I seen you go by that. What's a water port?
What's a what?
Water port.
It's underlined because of the spell checker. But go back up a little, Derek. It's underlined in red. There.
Marine terminal. So that'd be a berth. So it'd be that'd be like the international terminal. They're the same thing. Water port, marine terminal.
I just never heard that term before. So
yeah, it's just a legacy term in the code. Where we at? Compact spaces. It just clarified the definition. Bike parking. There were some adjustments that were made for that. Residential developments less than 5 units are exempt. That was consistent with the kind of previous setup. Here. Then the parking lot standards were retooled. We got rid of that old kind of setup. Now this one's one that has a little bit better, it better addresses angled parking and what you need to do to size your standard stalls with different types of angled parking. So this has a key, the D1, the D2, the A1. Those are all down here, so you can see what they are. So I've used something similar to this, even though it wasn't in our code, to help people who are trying to do angled parking and they weren't sure, okay, what do I need to do? How, you know, which angled parking solution makes sense for me, given what I have in terms of available land? So this will help a lot.
Does the code allow for a small complex to be developed without parking, and require on-street parking?
I'm
thinking of those new developments just east of Nana's Pub.
Yeah, that's in the Night Beach overlay. We didn't make any changes to the overlay provisions, but yes, that the Night Beach overlay does allow for on-street parking immediately adjacent to a property to be credited against what would otherwise be required for off-street parking, and it has reduced off-street parking requirements. But we're not modifying any of that. That's just what it is at this point. Then we had under 14.46 is where we put in some driveway standards. Landscaping and screening, there were some changes at 14.19 that have to do with parking lot. We increased the amount of landscaping required in off-street lots. And then a provision that deals with preferential carpool and vanpool parking. I think that's it to the parking stuff. I don't think there was... See, and then access, this was deleted because we created a new chapter dealing with access, so that just went away. Landscaping, I'm trying to remember exactly where that provision was, I think was under general requirements. The landscaping for parking, yeah, right here. So we made a change to a minimum of 10% of the total surface area instead of 5%. We had previously talked about it. You seemed at the time comfortable with upping the landscaping requirement in some of these parking areas, and so that's what that does. That was really the only change.
That apply to every parking lot, or is there a minimum of 5 on that?
I don't know. I think it just applies to any parking lot that's constructed. Why do you think there should be a threshold?
Oh yeah, if somebody's just putting up a little tiny building with two employee parking spaces.
We do have a threshold for surfacing. Maybe we key it off the same threshold for consistency.
Just a question.
Okay. Thank you. I don't believe there were any other changes. I think this was it. Yeah, so landscaping. For adjustments, we have a new section for transportation mitigation procedures. So when somebody's looking for to do something that doesn't comport with the minimum standards because they have steep terrain or whatever, when they're doing a new land division, for example, they can seek an adjustment through this process. It's akin to the adjustment we use for setbacks and heights and things like that. It would be, yeah, it talks about the process, the criteria. You have to have steeper slopes, you have to have a real constraint or historical resources could come into play there as well. And then we have to document how it meets, and these are the steps for going with to reduce the components that are being done. And this was in the TSP. So step one, eliminate on-street parking on one or both sides to narrow up the street so it can work with the terrain, for example. Then we, steps two, talk about some further changes, 3 and 4. So we'd go through that exercise to identify a narrower street section that would be appropriate. So that's what that talks about. I will be going through the plan development provisions just to sync them up with these changes, because that has historically been the tool that developers have used to try to come up with alternate standards, Wilder being a good example of a plan development where they came up with a whole palette of different street standards, just to make sure that the language in the plan development aligns with these other changes we're making. Covered these. Okay, vehicular access and circulation. This is new. It replaced a smaller set of language that was with the parking code, which I showed you. We're deleting that out and replacing it with this. And this gets at, this approaches and driveways onto public streets, where access is to be taken. Who's responsible for approving new accesses, which is a city engineer designate. Now, our public works department or engineering folks are working on getting some design standards adopted, which will provide further clarity as to exactly what type of curb is permissible, curb and gutter, driveway apron, details, that kind of thing. We always want access to be taken off the lower classification street if possible. Safer. And then we set out the access spacing standards. So minimum driveway spacing, driveways to driveways, intersection setbacks, minimum intersection setback for right-in, right-outs, and then maximum length between bike-ped connections. Those were the areas, and this came out of the TSP. And so this is actually setting some standards that we really didn't have clearly articulated in the past. This one deals with ODOT's facilities because it has to be the blueprint for urban design, which is approved by the state. This only applies to the US 20 and 101. And so their access spacing base is really keys off the type of development and posted speed limit. And I think in all cases, the existing driveways rarely satisfy these through downtown. Some requirements for updating accesses. Allowance for larger driveways to accommodate truck and trailer turn movements. Requirements of driveways be designed such that they're not going to facilitate queuing into the street. So that goes hand in hand with kind of the drive-through standards to try to prevent vehicles from just queuing up at a drive-through and then queuing out through the driveway onto the street and obstructing traffic. Sets a minimum for your driveway approach width.
What is the recourse when that design was done wrong, like Dutch Bros?
Not much until they come in. It's certainly if somebody is obstructing traffic, that's a traffic citation. But there's not much we can do in terms of saying, hey, stop now, you have to redesign your driveway because it's all fully permitted. Now, if they came in to do some modification, we may have an opportunity to revisit it. Some provisions about axle decel lanes, interplay between sidewalks and driveway aprons, ADA requirements are addressed here. So quite a bit of stuff in the driveway standard provisions. And then some language that talks about how you deal with exceptions or adjustments to those rules. And then some provisions that deal with joint access, which we have a number of those circumstances where you have a single driveway that's shared by a couple of commercial properties and they have a joint cross access easement in place. Next up would be a new chapter for pedestrian access. We didn't really have anything that really addressed that previously in the city's codes. So this talks about, principally this is talking about walkway systems too and how they interplay internal to a development. You know, that walkways are reasonably direct, designed for safe and convenient movement, that the surface material is not going to be an issue in terms of safety and hazards. This crosswalks get picked up here. And then this talks a little bit about, this was an image out of the memo that Angelo put together that they recommended we go ahead and fold into the code that illustrates some of the concepts that were covered under this section. So we haven't really addressed this clearly previously. We did add some language as an initial cut with the tsunami hazard overlay for internal pedestrian routing, but this extends it more broadly, less on natural hazard focus, more of a safety, convenience, and ADA orientation with this. So here's where land divisions, they leapt out of Title 13, which will be reserved for future use in the municipal code, and they landed here. I did move application requirements up. It was odd. I don't know why it was buried deep in the land division code. I do not know, but generally the first thing people ask or want to look at is, what do I need to submit to you to get a review of a land division proposal? And so those requirements are up front. I didn't change anything. They're just copied over. We may want to modernize this a little bit. I didn't have a chance to do that, but you know, we accept a lot of the information now by PDF. We don't necessarily need hard copies of a specific size until we actually see the final plat. So we can work off of an 11 by 17, or we can work off of the PDFs. And then when they bring the final plat, that's when it has to come in a very specific format for recording. So I may, unless you have any objections, I might try to modernize this a little bit with some current standards. These are older standards. This gets at content. It's got to be on a map. This is all fairly reasonable stuff so that we can understand what they're proposing and how it relates to the terrain on the property, to ensure that the lots are buildable, all of that. So we used to have a whole different set of standards for streets that didn't necessarily comport with what our TSP said street section should be. This is all, okay, all street standards now are under 14.4.4. And so that's why streets just refers over to that. I made changes to the blocks per Angelo Planning Group's recommendation. So it syncs up with the maximum block lengths that are allowed for new land divisions, which are set out in that table there. Okay, easements was just carried over, lots and parcels. So this is all standards for land divisions that were carried over. Development constraints gets it geologic in here somewhere. Yeah, here it is. The geohazards and revisions carried over. Public improvement requirements, these are they're all spelled out. They came over from the subdivision regulations. I did make a consolidate them per Angelo Planning's recommendations. One thing I think I very much would like to do is get rid of this. I'd like to bring some language to you on sidewalks that does away with this deferred sidewalk improvement agreement. We don't really need it. It's an administrative headache to oversee it. I mean, the concept here is if you do a subdivision, you're not ready to put the sidewalks in because you don't know where your driveway approaches are going to go because you haven't designed every single lot with, you know, what kind of house you want to have on every single lot. Well, we have the authority under our occupancy permit to make sure that we get the sidewalks, you know, before we grant occupancy in the new dwelling. So there's no reason for us to do a deferred improvement agreement if we have the hammer on occupancy. So
how does that work when they don't build out right away?
That just means you're going to have a sidewalk gap for a while.
Okay.
You know, until, I mean, I'll give you an example. You have Rich Baloney's little 9-lot one. He's doing 1 to 2 houses a year, just kind of plugging away at it. And the sidewalk gets filled in as he goes.
Okay. I'm thinking about more where they do development and they sell the lots. Granted, mm-hmm. some will build right away. Others will take, you know, well, decades.
The challenge is our public works department can't necessarily move on the sidewalk construction as quickly as these types of agreements envision. 115% of the estimated cost doesn't even, if you're dealing with trying to install sidewalk 5 years later, yeah. Your cost escalation is well past that. And then you have the situation, okay, what have we really done? Now we have sidewalk in place. It's going to be concrete. It's going to be wasted when they actually do develop because they got to rip out those panels to put a driveway approach in. So I'm just looking for some alternative language that's more workable. I was going to put that over on Angelo Planning since we have a little bit more of their time. So, hey, look, what are some other jurisdictions doing here that works a little better than this type of an agreement? Because this... The other thing is, you know, our finance department's really not tooled to deal with this kind of stuff. So then I run into the circumstances where they're having a hard time finding the cash deposits, and because 5-6 years have passed, you know, it's okay. Just.
Well, I'm not real fond of that, but I'm just.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we might want to refine it a little bit better, and because I hate to see it where you get something where you have 5 or 6 lots scattered throughout a subdivision, and that's just where, the only place where you don't have sidewalks. I just don't think that's a good idea.
Okay. We'll see what we can come up with that might work better than this.
Hey, Derek, is rolled curb still allowable?
Not generally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make it easier. Right. But no.
That's what I see elsewhere. And then people they build the house, and then about 2 years later, they rip it out and put a driveway approach in because they're tired of rolling over it.
Then the public improvement procedures. There may be a couple updates. I need to talk to our city attorney on the public improvement agreements in terms of what we will accept. So,
Derek, it would be nice when we actually get to see this document.
Mm-hmm.
If the sections that were just moved from one place to another were somehow indicated differently than actual changes.
Oh, okay.
You know, this is all red, meaning something has changed.
Yeah,
but all of this here has just been moved.
Yeah.
Hasn't really been changed. So I don't know whether you can accept changes on the move parts and then.
Different color.
You know, something.
Yeah maybe. Color. And just accept the changes, but then note at the top that this is a new chapter and this stuff came carried over. So where it's not redlined, like it's the same as it was.
It's just
going
to be very difficult to review this, especially for those of us who weren't here when most of this was put into place and would, I'm sure, have second guesses on a lot of it. Especially Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, just jotting that down. I can take a look at that, see what I can do to make that a little easier.
Just the presentation thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, that all carried over, and then they recommended we take a bunch of the provisions and kind of roll them into a miscellaneous category for ease of organization. So I didn't change any of these, but they ended up in a kind of a miscellaneous provisions section. So street lighting, street signs.
Are we picking up the district standards too? Like Deco District. Night Beach has got a standard for street signs.
The overlays and stuff like that.
No, this isn't impacting the overlays.
Okay.
The signage here was just.
I was curious about where that stuff's at because you guys do different colored signs depending on where you're at in the city. Where does that get picked up at?
Yeah, the way the code had. I guess if the subdivision was being done in an area where we have customized street name signs, we should be doing customized street name signs. But I'll talk to Public Works about it.
Yeah, I guess we're in subdivision? Land division.
Land division, yeah.
Okay, so it's not really.
Okay, these were all carried over.
Do those monuments actually get done?
Yep.
Okay.
And
yeah, I think the we don't do a lot of subdivisions, new subdivisions, so they're kind of few and far between. But if you go down to South Shore, for example, where they just did the new 12 lot or 11 lot subdivision, you'll see the monument boxes out there.
Oh, okay. But that's fairly recent then. I didn't pick up a lot of these other.
Correct. Areas. Yeah.
I was thinking I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah. So this is a more modern thing, but you know it's helpful that way your monumentation's protected.
And so, are street names covered in here? Who decides on street names?
Street name and numbering is Chapter 9.85 of the Municipal Code.
Okay.
So
if I'm doing a new subdivision, do I get to put my kids' names as the street name?
It doesn't exactly work that way. If they happen to be within the alphabet range that that geography would allow for, then yes. Alphabet. So
yeah, we're in alphabet order. You know, it goes Benson, well, all the different letters. It works out.
A, B,
yeah. Z go that
You'd
way.
Think I would, after all these years. Yeah.
Yep. No, I picked up on that a long time ago.
Yeah, no, we
and
have
then
that.
It's,
we
and
have
then
that.
It's off here and there too.
It
so.
Is. It's not perfect, but it's fairly consistent, and that's important for emergency service providers. So when they look at an address, they can frame where it's at in the community based on that grid that we have, basic grids. So, so that's why the last phase of Wilder, what you had like Fleming, and because they were in that kind, that they had to use those. We actually had some back and forth with them. Their original attempt was outside that range. And we said, no, you have to pick a name that starts with, you know, F or E or, you know, like Ellis.
Huh. Okay, interesting.
Cemeteries, you know, we almost never deal with these standards, but we need to have them. We do have a cemetery in town, so if we, you know, if they ever do any new subdividing, these rules apply. And then the final plat requirements, I got an extra space there, I'll fix that. This just gets at the, you know, what happens when you submit a final plat so we can make sure that it's consistent with the prior approval of the tentative plan, typically from you guys. And then line up a signature from the chair and then route it for recording. So that's what the stuff. Now, there are some circumstances where we'll allow to record before public improvements are completed, but they have to have an improvement agreement in place and they have to have that secured by 150% of the engineer's cost estimate of the work. And it has to be something that they can complete within a 12-month period. So it's a pretty tight window. So, but it does come into play. You know, we just did one on the little four-lot townhouse subdivision on 5th where the McEntees needed to be able to sell the lots because of some financial, how they had the financing working on the project. And they still had some sidewalk work that wasn't done. We did the improvement agreement for that. I'll be doing another one on Wilder. There are a couple of pieces that got backordered that they're not critical, but they just can't get the stuff. And so we're going to work that out with an improvement agreement. That gets at the financial assurances. I'm almost done. Property line adjustments. You know, this was the only other thing that was sitting in chapter 13, so it gets moved over. It's akin to a land division. Similar types of information you're looking at on a survey document. All of these are existing standards. So, Bob, to your point, I can come up with something that doesn't show it as a underline because these are all existing standards right now of chapter 13.99. They were just carried over to free up that title and merge the procedural provisions. So all process pieces now for land divisions and land use, other types of land use, zoning-related stuff, are under 1452. We already dealt with some of that here, but we did add in a pre-application conference requirement. That was a recommendation.
Pre-application conference for what things?
Well, we had typically we would require them already for things like traffic impact analysis because we wanted to sit down with the city engineer and make sure that whoever's doing the traffic analysis is covering all the right stuff. We require them of plan developments currently because they're complex and we want to make sure they get off on the right foot. We require them for subdivisions, again, similarly complex. We want them to get off on the right foot. So they had recommended type 2, 3, and 4. I dropped the type 2 because we just don't have the staff time to be doing pre-application conferences for all type 2s. Those are staff level. A partition would be a type 2. height or height or setback adjustment would be a type two. They're fairly straightforward, not that complex to pull together. Well, we'll certainly meet people over the counter, but to force them into a formal pre-application conference, you know, where we pull everybody together, that might be a little too much. I mean, on the other hand, I could throw type two in there. I mean, the way this language is set up, we can waive them, but then we're in a position where we may not be applying it consistently.
A lot of those type twos are over-the-counter decisions. I mean, they're decisions by you, not by...
Correct. They're by us, but there's still a land use decision with notice.
Yeah.
And there's a certain amount of plan information that they have, that kind of thing. I don't know that a pre-app's really necessary for that.
I don't think so either. I think if it does, we can change it later, but I don't really see it.
I might add some language in that says a pre-app conference is required. We're specified in the code for that specific action or a type three or type four, because for the traffic impact analysis, that's a type one, but that still needs a pre-app because of the technical nature of that.
We'll wait and see if we get any type twos that need to get, brought in.
Let me see what else. So now the same notice provisions apply. I could not carry over some. So I'll note which land division things pieces were not carried over, because there were several that were just a duplication of what we already had in 1452. So that's part of the value in combining.
Get all our notice distances to line up now, right? Because now we've only got one set, right?
Yep, this does that. I did want to chat with you briefly. In merging the expiration language, I went with the more permissive, which was in the land division code, which is a 2-year, 24-month, as opposed to an 18-month. So the way it's set up here is you get a 2-year approval before it expires. And then there's a 12-month extension that I can grant. And then if they need a further one, they got to go to you guys in a public hearing. And that's what this one is.
So you can actually have up to 4 years?
Yeah. Okay. Not unreasonable.
Well, given today's environment where you can't
do anything.
You can't get stuff. Get
supplies.
So.
How's that guy doing it? Over next to the big RV pipe.
The big RV?
He just gave him an extra extension. Is that?
Yeah, they're going to go under construction this summer. That's what they have to. I mean, their extension, this is their last opportunity before they have to go through the process anew. You're talking about Fisherman's Wharf, yeah. I've had conversations with them. They seem to be moving forward, but I haven't seen anything on the ground yet. They're well aware of their time limit. I think that's about it. I mean, there's some other stuff towards the back end that are just cleaning up titles and whatnot, so it's nothing. But, I mean, for example, for violations, the Land Division Code had a duplicative penalty provision. We're just using the one in the zoning code. So I'll point out what those were if you want to compare the two and see if one you like one better than the other. So... that's about it.
Okay.
So again, I'll I'll get this out to.
We're not gonna have time in this one.
Okay. On the agenda, but she's waiting.
I know, but she's waiting. She'd be doing public comment in the regular hearing.
Okay.
On the enforcement provisions, there you had a fine schedule and a potential jail term. When I suggest lowering the maximum jail term to 30 days, that'd be consistent with a $1,000 fine. 60 okay. days seems a little onerous.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. 7 o'clock. Close this meeting out.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then we'll